Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. We wrap up our training camp series with a focus on final preparations. And today, the topic is on-field situations. So thinking about all the things you need to prepare for and make sure you have checked off the list that you've covered with your players before you get into your first game. Now, this is going to be something you develop as the season goes on, but you want to at least have a basic introduction to your players so that they understand and overview at least of the plan. The plan will continue to develop. You can develop these situations over the course of the season. You're going to want to work some of these weekly, maybe some every other week. But the idea is your players are prepared for everything that they're going to face on the field on offense, defense, and special teams. So first, let's take a look at the offensive situations you're going to want to handle. A lot of these situations we've covered on the podcast with some of our guests. We'll link those in our show notes, so be sure to check those out at blogs.usafootball.com. So when we think of some special categories on the offensive side of the ball, probably the first thing that would come to mind is a backed-up offense. Typically, we like to work in the open field, we get into the red zone, and we work those kinds of things, but have you worked with your backup against the wall? Have you worked in the shadow of your own goalpost? And do your players understand exactly what you're looking for in those situations? A good backed-up plan is going to have that play for the minus one. For us, it was always we're going on two, and we wanted to get a quick 5 yards out of that if we could so that we're not taking a snap in our own end zone. The idea is if we're wrong on that, if somebody messes up, that's going to be a half a yard penalty for us. It's really not going to hurt our field position as much as it will for the defense and getting them to jump offside. So you want to think about some conservative runs. I know for us, we always like to protect the edges, create a wider flank so we didn't get anybody skinning off the edge right into the backfield, making a tackle for loss. So the wider we could spread those guys out and create more gaps, the better. Now that might not fit with your offense, so you have to think about how can you protect the edge if, for example, you're a 10 personnel team. Maybe it's motioning one of those slot receivers across and having him chat or down on the backside edge just to essentially serve like a wing on PAT. He's just going to create a wider flank and not let anybody get off the edge. You're probably not going to want a lot of ball handling here. You want it to be simple for your quarterback. You want to get that ball downhill as quickly as possible to pick up those yards. The other thing to think about is a great time for a shot. I learned that a long time ago in my earliest years of coaching. I was at a clinic at Carnegie Mellon, and Rich Erdely, the offensive coordinator there, a wing tee guru, was talking exactly about that and showing the plays that he liked to use as shots out of the end zone. So it is a good time for a shot. Typically, when we would practice this would be on a Thursday with our players. This is at the college level. And as soon as we would get down there, I would not even call a play, maybe other than the first time we practiced this. And the very first play on the minus one was always going to be a very conservative run and go on two. They would always know that. Get down there and run that. Then we would keep it on the one and work that play action shot. That could be a possibility as well, even in an on and on two play. Third down in this situation is critical, and you want to look at throws that are going to be very clean for the quarterback. In general, you kind of want to stay out of the middle of the field here. There's just a lot of bad things that could happen with a tip ball. Like four verticals, the seams are good at times there if you're getting an eight-man box. So if that's what you do, do it. But if not, you know, sprinting to an edge, getting a clean throw out on the edge with the opportunity for the quarterback to run is always a good thing as well. So think about what is that play for you on a third and eight type of situation where you do need to pick up a first down. You don't have maybe the luxury of punting in this situation. Maybe it's late in the game, or maybe you want to continue that drive. Whatever it might be, one of those situations where you have something that is a very good pass for your guy, something he's good at, and something that really creates a one-on-one situation where either your guy gets the ball or it's incomplete. The next thing to think about is the opposite side of things. Once you get down on the goal line, and not necessarily that 10 yards and in, but what if you get a first down and goal on the three? Typically, in those situations within the five-yard line, I always like to plan three plays, a three-play sequence. It's something we would install earlier in the week against the opponent's goal line defense, knowing exactly what we might get down there. And then we would work those three plays in sequence. And the idea was, I just wanted our players, we weren't necessarily always going to go up tempo with that, but I wanted our players to understand and know exactly what we wanted to do in that situation. As we would go on with the year, we might change a sequence up, but a lot of times we tried to keep our package very similar in there so that the first time we use it, that's what we felt comfortable going with, and we had rehearsed that and been ready to go. Some teams like to use this strategy, not one that I really used all the time, but thinking about some of those opportunities for quick kicks, especially on a third and very long in your own territory, that opportunity that they don't have a returner back and you can drop back and kick the ball, you know, get a good forward roll with it and pick up field position there. So it's a thought, it's a strategy. If it's something you want to use, you certainly need to prepare for it. And that should go in your checklist of things that you need to cover with your players. The next is your take a shot opportunities and thinking of those. When is it you want to take a shot? I think it's good for your players to know when to expect that. For example, the first time you cross the 50-yard line, maybe you get into the high red zone or on the fringe, and that's an opportunity before that space starts getting compressed to really stretch the defense and take a shot down the field. Is it after a turnover? A lot of times after a turnover, it's a good opportunity to take a shot, you know, looking at the emotions of the other team. They may be fired up to get that ball back and be aggressive, play things aggressive, and you may have that opportunity. Second and short is always a good one. And, you know, on second and short, I think you look at that opportunity to pick that play up and then immediately come back with that short yardage play as a run. Let's say if you didn't, come back and know that you got third down, get that shot. And as I mentioned, I think the other good area would be to take a shot when you're backed up, when you're in your own end zone. So think about those situations and when you want to take a shot. I think it's important to have those shots built in that you're going to take, you know, at least one down the field to stretch the defense, to keep them honest. Even if you're a heavy run team, take one of those shots a quarter. But again, you know, work it into your players understanding, where's the areas that we like these? Where are you going to typically see these? I think as players start to understand what you're looking at doing there, it gives you the opportunity. So, you know, if you are taking a shot, for example, they're looking for that shot down the field rather than thinking of a check down right away. Okay, get it into the mentality of exactly what you're trying to accomplish. The two-point play is something that's very important. I always liked to carry three of these, and we would continue to rep these throughout the season until we started using them up. And then typically, if we used one, we might replace it or tweak that one so it has a different look. That would be, in my opinion, the best use of it. Instead of changing it out, to just window dress it, make it look a little bit different, be able to come back to it later. So the two-point play, make sure you've worked those, make sure your players understand where you want the ball, what you're going to ask for there. You'll have the opportunity in the game, but certainly when they're on the same page and they know what you're trying to do, if you want the ball on the left hash, they know that they're going to tell the official to put it on the left hash. 4-minute offense. We certainly have those situations where we need to run the clock out, but do our players know exactly what they need to do? Example of this, you know, you might not want to score. We've talked about that on this podcast before with Rob Ash, where, you know, he recommended putting in a code word on top of the play call that indicated don't score. You know, if you're running and you break free, go down at the 1-yard line, but don't score because it's the opportunity for them maybe to get the ball back and do something with it. So think about that situation. And then the 4-minute offense, what do you want to use for that? Now, typically we would carry over our backed up plan because in our backed up plan, again, we like to protect those edges. We were focusing on our best runs in that situation. We were focusing on if we threw the ball conservative passes. So I think there's a good carryover there and synergy between those two packages. And again, for us, a lot of it was the same week to week. We weren't necessarily going to go tweak that, but get better at those things over the course of the season. And again, as you use those things up, that's the opportunity to break some tendencies and add a wrinkle. But because it happens so infrequently on game day, it might be mid-season or late season before you need to even think about tweaking that package. I think the idea, especially 4-minute backed up, you got to be going with some of your best stuff, and your players need to be good at it. They need to understand exactly what to do. You know, a situation like the 4-minute, you know, instructing your quarterback when he should take a sack to keep the clock running versus throw it away. I think that's an important thing there for them to understand. And again, if they haven't been in that situation, if you haven't coached them through it, they just don't know. Staying in bounds, that's another thing that's important during that time. Has it been covered with the players? Have they worked through it? Don't just tell them and show them on the board, but get them out on the field, even if it's a walkthrough. Walk through those situations and understand exactly what you need to do. A lot of teams at the high school level now have the 25-second clock, but there are those stadiums where you don't have that. So what's your plan to let your quarterback know when to snap the ball, and how have you worked that in practice? Back when I coached high school football, we had very few stadiums that had a play clock. So what we would do is we had one guy on the sideline who was designated to start a stopwatch exactly when the officials did, and to give our guy a 10-second indicator, right? He was going to get that hand up from the official in the back at 5 seconds. But we also wanted to alert him and the players as to when that was going to come. So typically we would give him a time to break the huddle. If we did that, it might be around the 12. We would give an indicator to break the huddle at that time. If we were no huddle, we were giving the 10 seconds. And that doesn't leave your linemen sitting in a stance the whole time, that they can relax and they know when to get down. And I would consider even, you know, at that point, kind of hiding where your receivers are going to end up if you're not, especially if you're not a 10 personnel team, that don't move your guys to the last position there until the 10 second comes and make those guys adjust against you. So thinking through that 4-minute procedure, how are you going to work that? How are you going to have your guys milk the clock? Did you work it in practice? Because you can't really go out in the game and expect them to know that. Certainly understanding and working your chart, I think, is important for this situation. When can you kneel down based on how much time is left on the clock and how many timeouts the opposing team has? And I do think it's worth, at least in the very beginning, working that so your players understand, guys, we're looking at a chart here. There has to be a certain thing that happens as to when we snap the football. Last plays of the game. We talk about 2-minute offense all the time. We had a great podcast last in season on the game plan with Wade Wilson. We'll check that out in our show notes and link to it. 1-minute offense, though, thinking about that, you know, what is your formula there? How are you going to handle that situation where you need to get into field goal range? How are you going to understand what you can do with your timeouts? Understand what stops the clock? Situations where you need to hurry and get to the ball, when you want to spike the ball, and what those procedures need to be. Because you're going to have your guys line up. If you line up illegally and don't have enough men on the line of scrimmage, you have a penalty there. So it's things you need to work at this time that are going to make the difference in the game. But also thinking about those plays, those last plays, you know, what do you do when you are out of range of throwing that Hail Mary or Big Ben play into the end zone? You're out of your quarterback's arm range. You know, what's that going to be? You have to have some kind of play that essentially is going to get the distance needed, or potentially get the distance needed, with a catch underneath and the opportunity to pitch the ball to somebody else or turn it into a rugby play. And we would work that every Thursday. We'd simulate it. It's hard to work all the time, especially when, you know, our defense knows what's coming. But that situation where those guys understand where they need to get to, where the linemen need to go to after the ball has been thrown, how they cover, how they get into position for a pitch, and to work that ball around the field. It's a lot of fun to work it. I think it's a good thing to get in during camp. It is a fun period to run that rugby play. So something to think about, though. What do you do in that situation where you're out of range of the quarterback's arm and throwing it to the end zone? Having code words for those plays, I think, is huge. And your players understanding in one word what we're going to line up and do, or one signal, I think, are things you need to work, because you don't have the opportunity always to huddle. In those last situations too, and we'll talk about this in special teams, but understanding who's coming on and off the field in a quick field goal is important for the offense as well. It's good to have these things drawn up on cards. That was a recommendation we got from Noel Mazzoni here on the podcast when he joined us one of the times. He's been on a few. Just that those situations, you card those up, that, you know, if you do have that opportunity to take a timeout, you could bring that out there and show it to the players. They have that visual, even though you've covered it in practice, that they know exactly what's going to happen in that situation. The middle eight, we had an article on that recently from Zach Dunn on our blogs, and again, we'll link that in show notes, that discusses the importance of the middle eight and how to think about that situation. The last 4 minutes of the half and the first 4 minutes of the second half, that you can go into that with a strategy and how you're going to call that. But again, I think it's one of those situations your players need to understand exactly what you're doing, that you are trying to milk the clock down to the end and leave no time for the opponent to score. And then, you know, you come out in the second half and drive the ball down the field for another score and take up some clock as well. And I think those are some important things for players to understand, just what you're thinking there and what the strategy is. I mean, it's going to rely on play calls and what you put together with that, but having those situations covered and letting them understand what the strategy is, I think, is important and helps get them on the same page. I think the other thing that needs to be covered from week to week is just to put some crazy fronts up against your offensive line and let them make their run calls or let them make their pass protection calls and make sure that they have it sorted out. How are you going to handle those situations? I mean, if the opponent was able to dissect what you're doing in your pass protection and come up with something that's hurting you, how do you adjust to that, right? And I think giving your players those situations that maybe aren't something that you practiced all week long, but certainly there's no rules that make the defense line up in a certain way. So practicing those things, haven't seen creepers, you show them creepers, all right? The simulated blitzes and how you're going to handle that, overloads, whatever it might be. Think about putting a situation in during the week. It could be a mental period where you just line up the scout against them, or better yet, you put it on the Go Army Edge app, you put it up on the wall, and you have all kinds of crazy stuff come at them and let them adjust to it on the fly, because you don't always get the opportunity to call timeout or a long period on the sideline to make all those adjustments. So think about that as well. Think about having a plan for maybe coverages that you typically don't see. If you haven't seen man coverage from that team, what's the man coverage plan? What are the three or four plays that you can go to on the game plan to do that? And again, maybe they don't get that work during the week, but maybe it's something that you have a man coverage period that you're going to work those three, four, five, six plays as the season goes on that attack your man coverage. Cover two man's the other thing, right? Having that team that gets in the situation where they know it's pass, manning up underneath, having two safeties over the top of it. What do you like to beat those things? Because, you know, there's a lot of things that are very tough against that, but there's things that work as well. So being able to put together a package, again, doesn't have to be huge. Two, three, four plays to beat that cover two man, I think, is critical in that situation. You're going to work all your typical situations over the course of the week. Make sure you've done those. Make sure they're worked into your practice plan. Certainly, you know, 60% of this game is called in first down, second and medium, third and short. So you're going to want to work that plan heavily, but have those third and long plays and know what you want to go to first. I think it's important for your quarterback, especially to get them into that rhythm, get them into the feel of the game. That, hey, when we get third and eight, this is our call. When we get third and 12, this is our call. And let him know. Let him be comfortable with it. He may give you input on it that he doesn't see those things well, and you can work to tweak that with him or make it better. Okay, let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. And a lot of these kind of mirror what we talked about here in these situations. But that situation when you need to get the ball back, the other team is running the clock out. They're running their four-minute offense. You need to get the ball back. It's things like get off that pile quickly. Preserve time as much as you can. Work that player out of bounds. Don't try to take him inbounds. If you can keep him up and drive him that extra yard out of bounds, that would be key for you to stop the clock. Working on getting that second player to the ball to strip the ball. Be aggressive in it, even to the point of, you know, potentially it causes a big play, but you're in a situation where you have to get the ball back. And working those things with your defense is important as well. For the offense, we talked about taking shots. Let your players know. Put them in those situations. Walk them around the field. Give them the situation. Guys, we had a turnover, open field. Expect the shot right away. Let's be alert for it. Don't be overly aggressive on things. If you have a coverage responsibility, stick with it. Crossing the 50 for the first time, right? Start them down the field. Simulate a drive. Again, this could be a walkthrough, but walking them through and here's the shots that this opponent might take. Here's what they like. Here's a situation where they may use it. High red zone, as we mentioned before. Backed up, right? Same situation. Backed up is a place where two things could happen. Number one, that shot. Number two, their safest play. So what do you want to do against that? And being very alert for that other team going on to or hard cadence in that situation, right? Short yardage, second and one, any of those things that allow them to go on a hard count, make your players aware of it, put them in those situations, walk them down the field, have the offense do things against them. It puts it in their awareness of what they need to do. Funky formations and gimmick plays, right? Lining those up, just like I mentioned for the offense, having a period for the O-line, picking up some crazy alignments and blitzes. Do the same thing for these guys. Line up a crazy formation, you know, split the tackles out or whatever it might be. Get into those things and see how your players adjust. What are they going to do? Even to the point where let them know, hey, if you don't know, call a timeout, right? Obviously, that's a strategy of the offense, but that has to be a fail-safe for your guys, that if they are misaligned, if they're out of position, if it costs you big, make sure that just stop the clock and let's huddle up, let's talk about it. and get them going. Either way, they need to know the strategy. How do you approach your timeouts, right? Are they for the defense? Are they for the offense? What does the head coach want? Those are things that have to be talked about as a staff, but your players need to understand as well. Gimmick plays. You never know when they're going to happen. You don't know what they might be built off of. If I was coordinating a defense, I would look at what are their best run plays. That's a really good place for an offensive coordinator to start, is to start to build gimmicks around the best run plays that they have. So take a look at those. Those might be a double pass off of it, or a quarterback to the halfback, and the halfback throws the pass, halfback pass there. Could be a situation where there's a reverse pass, but give them those looks that they're seeing all week long. Build off of those. Most likely an offensive coordinator will go there first, because the idea behind a gimmick is that they're going to do something to fool you. Work in things too, like Philly. I mean, it's becoming popular, right? Work that in so your guys understand, hey, something's kind of fishy right here. And at least they're alert. They're not sitting back on their heels thinking that nothing's going on. So giving them those situations, working those, I would card them up, bring those cards out every week, throw them into your script here and there, and work special periods where guys can walk through and understand what they're doing mentally against all that kind of crazy stuff. Working last plays on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I know we would always look to get our taller defensive backs in here. Usually a guy who's a jumper, could be a basketball player, basically to go up and to be the guy when that ball is going up in the air for potentially a tip ball, that he's the guy swatting that thing down hard away from the offensive guys, right? So do you substitute that guy in? But work that. I never liked working O against D. I always wanted to simulate it, especially because this was usually on a Thursday for us. We would have a Friday walkthrough. But I didn't want guys getting caught up. So when it was the offense's turn, they would run down the field and catch the ball. When it was the defense's turn, we would run the offensive guys down the field and we would let the defensive guys do their work and we wouldn't get anybody tangled up. But we understand the mentality. We understand exactly what we need to do on those particular plays. And then handling that rugby play that I mentioned earlier. How are you going to handle that? What's the way you want your guys to pursue to the ball? Is there anybody who kind of plays that safety and is always staying back and kind of being that last man to make a tackle? You know what the offense is trying to do, so you want to have something that answers that in that situation. As crazy as it sounds, you may want to school your guys up on giving up a score. Again, one of those situations where you might be better off preserving time on the clock and letting them into the end zone because your offense is clicking that day. You know you can get a score. So maybe you do want to risk that. But how do your players know to do that? What does that look like? Again, put them on the field. Give them a code word. They know what that code word means. They're going to go ahead and let them score so that we can line up and get the ball back on special teams. Scramble rules. Do you have scramble rules? Have you worked a scramble in practice? Has it come up in scrimmages? How do you cover that situation? I know we always like to work a scramble drill against our defense, to work it from the offensive side of the ball, but it provided a lot of value to them as well. So again, finding that 5 minutes and working a scramble drill, I think, is a huge thing to again, insert throughout the season. There'll be those weeks that maybe you just don't get that work, but especially when you have that quarterback who is a scrambler, you're going to want to work some of those things. Thinking about your answers for a scrambler. What do you do to contain him in the pocket, right? What's the mentality of the offense in those situations? Because there are those guys who you would prefer to have in the pocket. They're just not as good sitting back and throwing the ball around as they may be getting on the run and trying to make some things happen with their legs. Again, cover both of those situations, the scramble drill as well as how you keep that guy in the pocket if need be. Two-point play defense. Letting your guys know exactly what they need to do in those situations on the two-point play. You know, a lot of teams just leave their defense out there for that. Some teams will sub in some guys to rush off the edge, maybe a faster guy. If you do that, though, making sure your guys know to look to the sideline that the other team may be going for two. You just don't want guys running on and off the field, that you want them to be able to get the call and get lined up. But I think, again, it's something you need to work there. That takes us to special teams and looking at special situations, things you want to cover. Certainly the onside kick, the pooch kick, any kind of specialty kick. Some guys, you know, you look at Kevin Kelly, he has all kinds of specialty kickoffs that just do crazy things with the ball. What do you do in those situations? Have you taught your guy to fair catch if he's one of those up backs and you don't want him running the ball back? Or if they get it to a guy, if they pooch it to a guy who typically is not catching the ball, teaching him a fair catch signal. I know it sounds crazy, but again, if they haven't worked it, they might do the wrong thing, and you could get a penalty if it's an illegal fair catch signal. So working those kinds of things with your players is important. Looking at the fake punt, looking at defending the fake punt are important things. Have you worked that? What are good times for that to happen? Certainly anybody could do that anywhere on the field, but as you get closer, or as the opponent gets closer to your own end zone, you're going to want to look at opportunities there, both for you if you're moving the ball, or for them if they have a chance to fake a punt there. So when do you want to make your guys alert of that? I've seen it before. You know, a lot of teams want to drop back and be able to get a good return, and they're in a situation where nobody's protected against that punter running with the ball. So I think as you get into those situations, you want to be sure that you always have somebody at least giving a token rush there so that if something happens, they can run that guy down. Speed field goal, getting that field goal team out to the ball as the clock's running. I think the biggest thing is understanding what is your time. Typically, we would make that around 16 seconds for us to get our team out on the field. What is it for your guys? How well can they do it? At what point do you not have the time left to get them out on the field? Maybe you need to run a play. That's something you have to figure out. But having them schooled up, ready to go, alert on the sideline for that speed field goal, and then getting them out on the field to execute that before the clock runs out. Fair catch for a free kick. If you are using Federation rules, there is that opportunity that if a team, let's say, is punting out of their own end zone, you're able to fair catch the ball and essentially line up with your kickoff team there, and your kicker has the opportunity without a rush to kick the ball off the kicking tee through for 3 points here. I think that's a late game consideration. I think it's an end of half consideration. A lot of teams don't practice it, understand it. It's a situation I would put at least 2 returners back, maybe even 3, so that if they're trying to kick outside the hashes away from you, you have the opportunity to fair catch it there. And again, you can move it along that line wherever you want to kick the football through the uprights. You want to work the situation with your kicking team too, because if those guys were to go off sides, the kick doesn't count. So I think it's an interesting one. We do have both an article as well as a podcast on the fair catch for a free kick as well. So that kind of wraps it up. A lot of the situations there, I'm sure there's some that I've missed, but the idea is to start to wrap your mind around what are the things that can happen in a game that I want my players to understand. All of these things might not be important to you. You might not do them, but some of them that you do, be sure that the first time your players see it is on the practice field rather than in the game. I think that's good coaching. I think your guys are prepared, and you'll see that pay off over the course of the season as they get ready for and work some of those situations that may come up later in the year. Things that you prepare for, it may be that 2-minute drill, it may be that 4-minute situation, it may be a fair catch for a free kick, whatever it might be. Prepare your guys, have them alert for exactly what they need to do. You'll have the mental processes in, and I think your guys will be able to execute those things a lot better. Keep tuning in to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We flip to our in-season format next week, starting off with the leadership journey with Brian Kite. I'm excited to have him back this year. We're going to have Charlie Coyner on to talk with us about some trends that we're seeing, and our own Zach Dunn will join us on that one for some analysis on developing trends in schemes. Rob Everett is going to join us and talk about technology and analytics each week. Kevin Kelly is going to join us for some outside-the-box thoughts, and we have Andy Ryland back to talk about deliberate practice and some ways we can look at making our drills better throughout the season. Keep tuning in, and go to footballdevelopment.com for our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks. There's great drills in there that you can use throughout the season. If you're looking for some answers, I think that's a good place to go. Again, that's footballdevelopment.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and click a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.